And now, it's time for the Freedom Fiends Agenda live call-in show. Have you swallowed too much of the state's poison? The Freedom Fiends will stick their fingers down your throat and hold your hair back while you hurl. Call in before they get droned. Right now, live on Freedom Fiends Radio.
Admit it. You hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives? Most of them are status anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the Fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com.
Yeah. All right. Welcome, Fiends. This is your boy, Nima.
Nima Fiend.
Nima
How you doing,
Fiend.
Nima? How you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. Actually, I'm not, but I'm going to pretend for the folks in Radio Land. Yes, I am doing fine, folks in Radio Land.
Does Christmas shopping have you down?
You know, Christmas shopping hasn't been so bad, actually. We've only been once, so I'm sure it'll get worse and worse. But
any drive-by stabbings?
There was an attempted drive-by stabbing, but I held my own, as I tend to do.
You held your mud?
My mud?
That means you didn't poop yourself.
Ah, okay. Yes, I did not poop myself. Not that time, at least. But no, everything's been fine. You haven't been doing any Christmas shopping other than online or at all. What's up?
No, people should do Christmas shopping through the Fiends Amazon link, and then they don't have to leave the house.
Ah, yeah. Yep. I don't know. I think there's one good thing about leaving the house to Christmas shop, and that's that, I don't know, if there's somebody you don't know what the hell to buy them for, sometimes it can be nice to walk around the mall or some kind of place like that and see if there's just something that you didn't think of, you know, because everybody's out there trying to hawk their wares. So it's like going to a place where people are going to pitch to you. So if you're cool with that, it's cool.
I'm not.
You're
I hate
not?
Christmas. I'm a deist, but I get pretty close to atheist at Christmas.
Really? Why?
Which is kind of like saying, you know, I used to say I'm a minarchist before my coffee and an anarchist after my coffee. I mean, you either are or you aren't. But
yeah, but eventually you became an anarchist. So does yeah. this mean eventually you'll be an atheist?
I doubt it, because deism, if I were an agnostic, that would probably be true. Like agnosticism is to minarchy what atheism is to anarchy.
I wouldn't make that analogy, because the thing about being agnostic is you just place a low priority on it, or
yeah.
you understand that you will never know, and so why try? I feel like minarchy, you are taking a principled stand. Your principles are just different than anarchists.
Your principles are just unprincipled.
There you go.
Well, you know, it's kind of that thing of like what Larkin Rose said, where, you know, he was a minarchist for years and he'd make all these minarchist arguments and then find himself contradicting himself.
Right.
And the only logical path was being an anarchist. But
yep.
that's not a lot of agnostics just don't care either way. And a lot of atheists are really, really, really adamant and religious about it, which
they are.
I find interesting. But I guess it's kind of like us being religious about liberty. Like when people try to make state arguments for us, we're like, no, 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 you're wrong. Whereas right. deism is basically the belief that there is a supreme creator of some sort, and it created everything and then just kind of went to sleep and, you know, went bowling or something or went to a strip club and doesn't mediate in day to day, you know, like doesn't make the bus come on time when you say a little prayer and doesn't cure your kid's cancer when you say a little prayer, you know.
I said a little prayer.
Yeah.
Reminds me of that SNL bit with Carrie Strug and her brother, who was played by, who's that guy? You want some cookies? The other half of the night at the Roxbury that wasn't Will Ferrell. He's like, I said a little prayer. But yeah, the thing about atheists being so hardcore in their atheism, I think it's because they still see established religion as the villain in the world that's oppressing people and keeping people down.
Yeah.
But that big villain in the world isn't, I guess it still is
government,
religion, but it's the religion of the state now.
Yeah.
When
religion is problematic, it's because the state is backing it. I mean, religion, right. You can take it or leave it. You know, I mean, I drive by a Catholic church every day that has a big billboard that always says things like, you know, Jesus doesn't want abortion, or Jesus doesn't want you to beat your wife, or things that, you know, I don't do anyway without Jesus. But, you know, the problem is when those people use the state to try to get their ends and means enacted.
Exactly.
It's like Sharia, you know, like Will Coley made the argument that, you know, Sharia isn't the problem. Women being forced to cover their faces women covering their faces voluntarily isn't the problem. It's the problem is where Saudi Arabia makes it mandatory.
Right.
You know, the problem is where, you know, Sharia is mixed with the law of the state, and it's not voluntary, and it's not something that you can opt out of.
Right. And I think it's because statists take the state as a foregone premise. Like the state to them is air or water. They don't even really, they're like fish and water. They don't even notice it's there. So they can never make that the villain. And people make arguments that, oh, that's what the war in the Middle East is all about. And that's what the Israel-Palestine is all about. It's about religion. And, you know, there's two old religions and they've been fighting for thousands of years. But really, that's only a tiny part of it. I mean, really why they're fighting is because the British and other imperial powers divided up the Middle East, drew these arbitrary lines, then gave this whole chunk of land to people who haven't been living there, who then displaced the Palestinians. So there's some religion in there because there's differences. But what really started it was state action. It was a politician. It was Winston Churchill drawing up the map before tea, as he said, and was quoted as saying about the Middle East. It was the state that caused the two conflicting ideas or belief systems to be at odds with each other, not the two conflicting ideas and belief systems.
It's interesting that you use the, you know, it's like a fish looking for water, or it's a fish swimming in water. He doesn't see the water, for statists believing in the state. I've actually heard that same analogy in AA in favor of that there is a God. I've heard people say, you know, when people get into AA, they tell you, you got to find a higher power to stay sober. And when the young, newly minted, sober guy is looking for God and can't find it, often the old timer will say, looking for God is like a fish looking for water. You know, in other words, it's all around you. I heard there's an interesting analogy about atheism. I can't remember who made it, but they said that was it in favor of or against it? It was basically that it was in favor of creationism and against the theory of evolution without intervention of a higher power. And it was someone said that that things evolving on their own to the point they are now would be like a tornado going through a junkyard and assembling a Boeing 747. which is kind of a stupid analogy, because there wouldn't be any parts for that thing. It'd be more, I think a more apt thing would be, you know, a tornado going through a junkyard and assembling a 67 Chevy, because there's probably the parts for it in that junkyard. But it's actually kind of a takeoff on the 100 monkeys typing the works of Shakespeare, and it's pretty much dismissed by anyone who's, as an analogy, it's pretty much dismissed as hyperbole.
Yeah, but that's the argument he's trying to make, basically, is that it can't be like the monkey on a typewriter. I don't know, man. How do you believe in evolution? Is that a discussion we can have or want to have.
Somebody's posting gun porn in the. That's a nice
of course,
gun
the
porn.
Misdirect.
There.
Yes, let's change the subject.
The misdirect. That looks like an AK-47 shotgun. I don't even know what that is. But anyway, it's shiny things being dangled out of the corner.
No, that's a high point. That's a high point carbine.
Oh.
That's his high point. It looks like a 9mm or a 38 or 380. And then below it, the corresponding carbine.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it was shiny things out of the corner of my eye, and it did distract me from this tautological and theological discussion that we're having here, and cosmological discussion. So your question is, do I believe in evolution? You sounded incredulous. Of course I do.
No. It sounded like you didn't there. Like, if you make the argument that, okay, you do.
I was making the argument that argument is silly, even if it proves what I believe. But it didn't prove what I believe. Because it was a religious person saying that evolution can't be how things happened without a God, that they have, you know, saying that the theory of evolution is fact is like saying a tornado could assemble a jet plane by passing through a junkyard. No. And then there's that intelligent design thing, which is basically was literally something a Christian think tank came up with to get creationism into schools. And, you know, it's kind of a thing of like, well, God created everything, but he used evolution, which if, you know, I mean, that makes more sense to me in my watchmaker theory of the world, which is where God is the watchmaker who wound everything up and set the gears in motion and then walked away. Although I never liked the watchmaker analogy because that would mean the watch is winding down and stopping eventually.
Yeah.
But
I guess I've never felt the need to justify some kind of central planning on the universe for, you know, life on Earth or solar systems or anything like that. I mean, not to say that there isn't one. I'm not trying to make an argument for atheism or against deism in any way or against theism in any way. But to me, it doesn't seem I guess it seems extraordinary, but it doesn't seem beyond the ken for evolution to have produced what we see now, because the universe does amazing things all the time, like things that we can't even conceive of yet. So I don't see why creating some hairless monkeys who can create the internet is so surprising.
That's awesome. I mean, I don't really put a lot of thought to God and to a lack of God or a God or what God did or what God's going to do to me to punish or reward
what God's going to do to me.
To punish me or reward. Touch me. God touch me. Well, I feel like
you don't want to be God's sub. Is that it?
when I believed in God as, you know, before I was a deist, I used to say I was religious. God touches me in special places all the time. You know, I kind of had a sexual view of God, but, and I have that song, God is a Woman. God, my God is a woman, 700 feet tall. Blah blah blah, mm-hmm. which is really, it was kind of cute. Basically, that was in AA when they said you got to find a higher power. I was a sex maniac at the time, so I said, "Well, okay, my God is a 700-foot-tall woman." But there was some really specious stuff. If that's not specious enough, there was some specious stuff in that song, like if an airplane flies over my head, she put it there to keep me entertained. It's basically I'm the center of the universe kind of mm-hmm. song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Someone said, yep, you're going to hell.
Nice.
In the chat room. Nice. It's nice to go to hell. I don't know. I don't believe in a hell. I don't know.
I don't even think there's a biblical basis for hell from what I've seen, you know, and mostly from hearing from Ben Stone talk about it. I don't know if there's actually explicit hell spelled out in the Bible. But,
well, there is something about a lake of fire.
I'm not going to read that whole thing, man.
I know. There is something about a lake of fire, and but it's not in the context of hell. It's in the context of the book of Revelation, I believe. But I think from what I know from listening to people who have actually read it, like Ben Quaker, all that is something that was made up in the Middle Ages by priests
to scare people
into mm-hmm. compliance. It was basically the government. It was the priests acting, the church. The church was the government then.
Right. Hell was terrorism of the Middle Ages.
No, hell was prison of the Middle Ages. When things were so bad that prison looked good, they needed something worse than prison.
Okay. Fair enough. But I mean terrorism in the sense that it was the scary thing that you should all be more afraid of so that you can cede your power and autonomy to us, the central, you know, religion or
I think clergy. We should I think we should open it up for calls. If there's anybody who knows more about this stuff than we do from either side or the middle side or no side, why don't you call in? What's the number there, Nima?
You can call us at 307-215-5171. That's the Fiends live call-in number. It is our Fiends Agenda show, no longer on Adam Curry Network, but our own freaking agenda. And you can call us at 307-215-5171. Thank you, Fiends.
Yep. And I got a few announcements here while we wait for our first caller. The name of this title is The Fiends, A Gift to the Future. And that's another kind of like, really, boy, you sure think a lot of yourself. But every one of these casts we do, I'm not doing for, I mean, I'm doing it for the people that are going to listen live and going to listen tomorrow on the podcast. But I'm really doing it for 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 years from now. And we are working mm-hmm. towards keeping that solidly available through BitTorrent. So,
oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
if you're not it's, torrenting... You're stealing.
It's funny you brought up the self-deprecating ego joke because somebody in the chat room said, Nima, tell MWD huge echo when we were testing sound because I had you echoing.
And you read it as ego?
I read it as ego. I said, tell him yourself. I'm not going to tell Michael that. But no, you're right. Media can be disposable or long-lasting, and I hope, at least that's the goal, that we don't just say this happened, it was bad. You know, there's that saying, and it's said by some evil wife of a statist. I don't know if she was evil, but she was the wife of an evil statist like Eleanor Roosevelt or something like that, who said that, you know, small minds discuss people, mediocre minds discuss events, and great minds discuss ideas. And I think there's something to that because ideas.
That's awesome. Say it again. Small minds.
Small minds discuss people, mediocre minds discuss events, and great minds discuss ideas.
And I feel like a lot of Liberty Media focuses on the first two more than the second two or the last one.
Yeah, I think a lot of media in general. I mean, a good example of this is. Take a look at Entertainment Tonight or Celebrity News. Think of the intellectual range there when you're watching TMZ or something like that. Think of the kind of people who watch that. And then move on up to something like CNN Headline News. Those are the people that discuss events, but they still discuss people, especially if it's about a sex scandal like Petraeus, you know, boning some chick. Oh, that's the worst thing in the world. I don't get it. But the people who really discuss ideas usually aren't even on TV because you're not allowed to discuss ideas on TV. God forbid people ponder the premises on which society is based because those kinds of things threaten the status quo. They don't want you to ponder the basic premises at all.
And they'll make a nod to discussing ideas, but they don't really. I mean, like Meet the Press, which has been going since like 1968 or something. I remember watching it as a kid. And the idea was smart minds getting together – touching on the concepts of the, you know, the news of the day, but then discussing the ideas behind it. But it was flawed because it was all from a statist point of view.
Right, right, right. Yeah. See, yeah, that's a misdirect. That's okay, we're going to discuss ideas. And then there's two flavors of statist ideas. It fools people into thinking that those are the only two ideas available.
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody. I gave a coworker a ride home the other day, and we were chilling a little bit after, you know, smoking a cigarette or whatever. And somehow my podcast came up as a subject in anarchy, and it was like, so what did you think of the election? And, you know, I explained, well, it's just ridiculous. There shouldn't be elections in the first place. But for somebody to ask that question at first of an anarchist, like, that should be obvious, right? Like, who do you like better, Mr. Anarchist, Barack Obama or Mitt Romney?
It's like asking an atheist, what do you like better, Catholicism or Buddhism?
Right. Right, know, right, right.
Catholicism, or, you know, in America, it'd probably be Catholicism or baptism.
Yeah, yeah.
Baptists. Baptism? What's Baptistism called?
I don't know. I guess it's just a form of Protestantism. I don't know what the
It's really hardcore Protestantism.
Yeah.
It's kind of awesome. It's kind of awesome.
Kinda awesome?
It's kind of interesting. I mean, even if you, if you don't even cover the extreme weirdos like the snake handlers and the poison drinkers, but just baptism in general, I mean, it's really, really, really hardcore. My dad was a Baptist. My dad was a Baptist preacher or a Baptist Sunday school teacher when he was younger.
Yeah, and I everyone think my here, grandpa everyone here, on my mom's side is Baptist now. Like, he converted when he was like 70 or something, and his wife is a Baptist, but I don't really visit with them or talk to them much, so I don't really I don't really, it doesn't affect me, and I don't really know much about it. I mean, I hear the basic stereotypes like, oh, they're not supposed to dance and things like that. But do you know more about it? Like, what's so hardcore about it?
Well, there's actually something that's called, I think it's called Hardcore Baptists, where they do smoke and drink and cuss and dance, but it's okay because not just like the Catholics where they, you know, apologize it. But it's more like, it doesn't matter. If you got the Lord in you, you can do all that anyway. I kind of like that.
Because redemption and forgiveness from Jesus is all that matters. So once you're saved, you're saved and you can do whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had that thought when I was like 13 and I sort of kind of thought about becoming born again, or maybe I did. I think I was quote unquote saved. And I was wondering, and I did take it to that logical conclusion like immediately, like, oh, well, I'm saved. So doesn't matter what I do. And then they try to counter it. Well, if you're truly saved, then you will automatically act like you have Jesus in you and you will automatically be nice. But that seems to kind of take free will out of the whole concept, doesn't it?
Yeah, I actually, you know, did that saved crap too when I was younger and then kind of renounced it later. And this girl that was Christian, hardcore Protestant, some weird church, I don't remember, who wanted to marry me, basically told me that once you're saved, you can't not be saved, you know, like it was kind of like
forever.
It was like AIDS, you know, it was like HIV.
It's like you can't expatriate from the US.
Yeah. It's like herpes. Once you got like it, you can't get
nice.
Rid of it.
Nice.
No take backs.
Yeah. I remember there was one of those big TV churches, Lakewood Church in Houston, I think it was, with Joel Osteen.
Your part of the country is really big on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess Joel Osteen was the son, and then there was his dad, who was like a big televangelist too. Like, you can see them on TV, like, pretty much anywhere. And Joel Osteen had a hot wife, like, super hot, like, giant tatas, nice body, pretty face. And I remember my aunt was big into the Lakewood Church, and so we went there with her once. And they did this thing where you could come up front and be saved and give a hug to his wife. And so I acted like I was saved again so I could go touch his wife. That's wow. Horrible. I was 18.
You know, are you confessing over your pod confessional?
Oh, there you go. Sure, yeah. I'm so, just saying, Joel Osteen, I tried to cop a feel on your wife, so what are you going to do?
Say what you said about crappy pod... you did a podcast. Yeah. We're not going to say who, but it was like unlistenable. I mean, it was unlistenable. The first thing I recorded on a computer in 2006, when I had no idea what I was doing, sounded better. And that was done by, like, you know, plugging a little microphone from a tape recorder, like those little plastic mics, into the computer directly with no mixer or anything, no, you know, EQ, no sound compression, no preamp, nothing. Plugged it in and used like the built-in Windows 3.1 recorder and recording something, and it sounded better than what that guy did in 2012, man.
Yeah.
What'd you say about it?
Well, it didn't sound like – it sounded like it's some kind of app or something that anybody can get on the internet, like something they pitched to grannies, Grannyware we call it. And the name I came up for it was Menopod. So Gertrude can tell the world about what she's cooking or something like that.
Menopod. For middle-aged men who want to yell at the world while they from the comfort of their home while they look at squirrels outside the window.
Menopods.
Yeah, you said now Gertrude can podcast too, which is funny because my late grandmother's name was Gertrude. And, you know, okay. If she were around today, she'd probably be doing a podcast where, like, because she was Baptist and really religious, and she'd probably be talking about Jesus on a menopod.
Yeah. Well, I started off with Ethel as the old lady name. But I guess I wasn't spelling it right, because when I spelled it, I was thinking ethyl alcohol, and so I put a Y, and I was like, no, that'll be confusing. So I went with something else. I went with Gertrude, which is unmistakably an old woman's name.
Yeah, it's an old German name. It's one of those names that not many people are named that anymore, like Lydia, although a lot of no white ladies are named Lydia anymore. It's all it's a Hispanic name, but
Yeah.
Which is too bad. Lydia's a nice name. Gertrude's not. Gertrude and Hazel. And
names like are kind of cyclical too, yeah. Like fashion. Which is interesting too, because my wife's really into that, like looking into which names are popular when. And it's kind of interesting.
Names for witches.
For witches. It's kind of interesting how that plays out sans central planning, it's almost like there's natural attractors and natural order. It's a good example, I think, of anarchic order, of how something will just all of a sudden become popular and people will take to it. And it goes in like trackable cycles, and it's really interesting because fashion does the same thing, music does the same thing. So I would point to that as an example of anarchic order, how when people left to their own designs, their own desires, like in music or fashion, there can be standardization. There can be something that people agree upon and do and listen to and consume. And you don't need somebody in a grand Soviet somewhere telling you how many shoelaces to make.
Now, is Soviet a noun like that? I like it. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. I'm not 100. I mean, I was barely alive during the Cold War, but I'm pretty sure like the Soviet was a noun for some kind of committee or some kind of subset of the state in communist or Soviet countries. Not 100% sure on that.
I'm posting kitty pictures in the chat room.
Huh.
Some I just took. The one of Fuzzy sitting on my pod table. He jumped down before I could take a better one. But
Fuzzy was he? No, that's Peanut, or I see Peanut.
I'm getting there.
Okay. Did you see the I posted a cat picture yesterday of my cat curled up next to my Springfield XD 9mm. He just like went and curled up in a ball next to my gun. I don't know why, but it was cute.
Guarding it.
Or it was guarding him.
No, he was guarding it. Cats guard you while you sleep. They guard your valuables.
Do they really? I somehow doubt that.
Yeah.
I don't know what cats are good for other than petting occasionally and laughing at their goofiness.
They are really goofy. They get on my nerves sometimes, man. They're always... We have 3 cats, and it kind of feels like we have 8 cats because they're always active.
For me,
one is always active. And you go in one room, and then you go in the other room, and the same cat's in there being active.
Like active, like noisy, like scratching on walls, stuff like
all
that.
All of it.
See, mine are annoying because I feel like there's always some kind of bodily function coming out of one of them onto our rug. And why is it that no matter... I've lived in so many apartments lately that have like tile or fake hardwood on the floor, you know, like not carpet. The animal will find the one carpeted spot or the one piece of softness, like a rug or a shirt on the ground, to do any bodily function in. Puke, poop, pee. It's like they don't – why do they have to find something soft to do that on? I literally can't leave a dirty piece of clothing on the floor. Because we have a crazy old cat that'll go pee on it.
They'll either do it on there or on a book.
On a book. Oh, yeah. Yeah, my little cat, the one that's actually ours, Flock, in the orange one. I guess he's not little, he's big. But he took a dookie on Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. I was like 200 pages in, and he just plopped on it. And I'm like, why'd you have to do that? But I don't know. Rand, I guess who needs her at this point?
Yeah.
She helped to build some parts of the road, but the road's already there. I'm just driving on it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, let's see. We got some more news here. More news. There's an awesome movie that I want people to go out and watch because we're going to review it. It's called Uprising, and it is about the – what's it about, Nima?
Well, apparently it's about the Warsaw Ghetto. I haven't watched it yet. I just downloaded it. But there was an uprising in the Warsaw Ghetto. I actually read the description of it in – what's that book?
Unintended Consequences.
Unintended
Consequences. I didn't send you that. That book's – no, man. I didn't send you that. No. What? No.
I was using the royal you. It was a rhetorical you.
Good catch.
I took a look at that and – I really want to know more about it, so I'd really like to see this movie because apparently like 20, 30, or what, 40?
300. 350. So I think it was actually like 600 at the beginning. Yeah. The movie's really about – the movie's about one cell of them. But yeah, basically the Nazis, you know, surrounded Warsaw and there was – you know, pushed all the Jews into one neighborhood, which they called the ghetto, which is where the term ghetto comes from.
Right, which is what the Jews are now doing to Palestinians in the West Bank.
Yeah, which is really ironic, and that's, you know, going to be a whole other discussion. But yeah, I mean, that was the goal in this movie, was to get to Palestine. You know,
like, hold on, let me retract that so I don't sound anti-Semitic, and I don't like to break up your thought process. But when I say Jews, I meant the Israeli state.
There you go.
I shouldn't have said Jews because it's not a whole religious collectivist thing. It's the Israeli state. Sorry. Go on, Michael.
Yeah. Basically, the whole thing as it happened, and this movie's pretty historically accurate presentation of it, is a really important example of why citizens should own guns, own them quietly, have a few buried, and be able to use them. Really what happened was, like, a bunch of the Jews in the ghetto, you know, a lot of people were, like, going along. I mean, first of all, this movie is kind of unique in that generally with movies about the Nazis, it's all about what happened in the camps and how they were killed. And this actually shows before that what day-to-day life was like before they all got shipped off, and how horrible it was just on a day-to-day, like, you know, got cops on the street, soldiers on the street, stopping you, searching your bags, stealing your stuff, you know, kind of, I mean, I saw a lot of parallels.
Kind of like America today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, it showed a lot of that. And basically they were rounding Jews up and taking them to what they said were work camps, which were actually extermination camps. Oh, they made them work for a while until they couldn't work anymore and then killed them. But there were some Jews, there were a lot of Jews who were like, you know, we can't fight back. This is going to get better. If we fight back, they'll just kill us. We can just hope and pray to our God that he'll come down and fix everything and this won't go on and we'll be saved, or, you know, the Americans will march in and next week and save us. Mm-hmm. And there were a few who were, like, not in denial. They were like, no, they are going to systematically kill every one of us after robbing us and torturing us. Then they're going to kill us. And they weren't trained with guns, and basically they had a few broken, effed up pistols, you know, the family pistol or whatever. And what they started to do was plan and systematically get people together. And there were spies, and when they found spies, they'd kill them. And they figured out how to do urban warfare, guerrilla warfare. And they would do things like, you know, walk up to a soldier, ask him for a light of a cigarette, and, you know, or ask him a question or something, and another guy would come up behind him and shoot him in the back of the head, like under the helmet, you know, right up in the brain pan. And then, you know, they do that when there's nobody else looking, try to not get caught, and then they grab their rifle and their sidearm and their cigarettes, and sometimes their uniform. I mean, some of them were actually Jews wearing Nazi uniforms to blend in, which is pretty awesome. So the movie has a lot about how to conduct guerrilla warfare, I guess, which is really surprising because it was made by Hollywood and it stars, like, some actual gun-hating actors in it. I also thought it was kind of funny that they made the one Republican in Hollywood, what's his name, John Voight, they made him a Nazi. Which is very Hollywood. But I'm just amazed this was a Hollywood product.
Huh. And, well, it didn't, I mean, it wasn't like a hit. It didn't take off, did it? I mean,
no, it was a 3-hour miniseries on TV, and when you search it on whatever those networks are where people search, first of all, you can get it on DVD on Netflix in America. It's not available for streaming, and it's not available in Canada, someone told me. But there's other ways to get movies, and I don't really want to go into it. But if you look for it for that, you have to search through, because when you search Uprising, there's a lot of other things that aren't this movie, because there's a Tron movie called Uprising.
Yeah,
so there's like 1,000 results for that and one for Uprising, the movie. And the only version that's out there on those kind of networks is English, but it has burned in Swedish subtitles you have to ignore. So whatever. Mm. But anyway, I just posted this thing in the chat room that I want to discuss. Go ahead and click on it. It's from the Jews for the Preservation of Firearm Ownership website, which was started by a guy whose dad was killed in Nazi Germany, and he's smart about it and doesn't forget. You know, the JPFO are the few Jews who go, yeah, we don't want this to happen again. That's why we want to have guns. Whereas a lot of the gun-grabbing politicians are Jewish. It's kind of surprising to me that they don't remember and don't think this could happen again. But of course, now they're part of the
they feel
the SS,
like they're part of the power structure, right?
So they'll keep it from happening, or they want it to have. You know, they want it, they'll be on the right side of it, they think. But I don't know. The name of the movie is Uprising, and but look at this JPFO link to the firearms laws in Israel. I'm really surprised how restrictive they are, considering this. And I talked to my friend who grew up in Israel, lives in America now. He's the only person I know who has been in both the Israeli army and the U.S. army, and he has pretty unique perspectives on a lot of it. And he's kind of a minarchist, you know, kind of, I mean, he's not quite anarchist, but he's a gun guy and a motorcycle enthusiast. And, you know, I asked him, like, do they teach about this uprising in school in Israel? Are these people looked at as heroes? And he's like, yes, they teach it in school and they're looked at as heroes. And I'm like, what about with American Jews? And he's like, I don't really know any American Jews. You know, he's Jewish, but he's not involved, I guess. Mm-hmm. But he said that in Israel, they teach about the uprising and talk about these brave people who did these incredibly brave things, you know, knowing they could die anyway. Basically, the whole thing was, we know we're going to die. We'd rather take a few of them out first. And, you know, maybe mm-hmm. if 700 of us try this, 10 of us can get out. And 10 or 20 mm-hmm. did. They got right. out by going through the sewers, through dead bodies and shit. And while the Nazis were pumping poison gas and pouring gasoline in there and lighting it.
Right. And that's what it took. Like, didn't they hold off the Nazi war machine, which was huge and massive and overblown? Didn't they hold them off for like months?
Yeah.
Just a small handful of resistors with a small handful of weapons held back Panzer tanks and the German Air Force or the Luftwaffe, I guess it's called.
Yeah.
That's insane. I mean, I guess they still met their end, but, you know, I feel like I would rather be a resistor and have that chance to be one of those 10 that get out or get my family out or at the very least, die not as a slave, but as a freedom fighter.
Interestingly, there's actually an actor in this movie who looks exactly like you. And, I mean, okay. Exactly. Like,
I hate it when people say that. I'm always really scared to go look at what they actually look like.
He looks way more like you than your brother Frank looks like you, and Frank looks a lot like you.
Huh. Weird.
But okay. And he's a Polish Jew, and originally he was a rat. He was a policeman working for the Nazis, which a lot of the Jews did to feed their families, and he literally says that in there, like, I don't like his friend, you know, a friend he grew up with is like, why are you wearing this uniform? Why are you doing this? And he's like, I don't like it, but I have to feed my family and protect my family. And he ends up joining the resistance and actually being really brave. And he also like stays as one of these uniformed officers. So he can blend in and mm-hmm. false flag and do surveillance and find out what they're up to. And in the end of this, he actually sacrifices himself and dies so the others can get out. And it's really, I mean, that's what a hero mm-hmm. is, you know?
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. So, well, I definitely want to give that a look, but like you told me 2 days ago and literally I worked and went to bed and woke up and podcasted. So
you and your working and your marriage, God, your life. Getting in the way of the pot. I'm kidding. It's not. But read this JPFO link. Read the thing, yeah. like All what right. it takes to have a gun in Israel. It's really amazing to me because it's actually, in a way, like less restrictive than like, you know, like Australia, where it's really hard to own a gun, but you can if you bend over and do all this crap and pay all this money and join these clubs and stuff. But it's more restrictive in that it's incredibly statist. So go ahead and read these.
All right. All right. And before we preface, before I read it, I also want to preface it with, you know, Israel. Well, okay. I'm going to wait until we get to the second section of this. I'm just going to go ahead and start reading. All right. The Israeli Department of the Interior makes notification to the general public the requirements necessary for the obtaining of a permit to possess a firearm. One, applicant must be a permanent resident of Israel for 3 consecutive years prior to making application for firearms permit. 2, applicant must be 21 years of age. 3, the permit request must be for personal use, not to engage in the business of firearm sales. 4, applicant must fall into one of the following categories. A, part-time reservist for 3 years, may own 1 handgun. B, such a reservist is a member of a gun club.
And reservist basically means it's like the National Guard.
Right, right. For the IDF, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
C, professional licensed public transportation driver transporting a minimum of 5 passengers may own 1. So bus drivers can own 1 handgun.
No, I think that's like, you know, maybe bus drivers.
But it says a minimum of 5. So yeah, that'd be bigger than a cab.
It's not a limo. Yeah, it's bus drivers. Yeah.
D, licensed animal control officer may own 2 hunting rifles, not fully automatic weapons, or semi-automatic weapons with a limited capacity magazine. So what, he has to have bolt action or lever action, I guess?
Sounds like 5 or 10 round rifle.
All right.
Yeah, so after you wing that bear that's eating Jewish children or Israeli children, you have to quickly reload.
Jew scouts, like in the South Park episode?
Jew scouts. Oh, man.
There's an episode where bears actually go eat the little juice. Well, they're juice squirts. They're not yet juice scouts. Squirts. Anyway,
that's the Cub Scouts, yeah.
Right. Full-time dealer of jewelry or large sums of cash or valuables may own one hand.
Now that is really sounds like Saturday Night Live. Like, boy, that, you know, like you'd have Adam Sandler talking about, boy, that sounds Jewy. You know, like, yeah, well, if you deal jewelry, you get to carry a gun.
Hey, it's in the word. Are they the same Latin root for jewelry and Jew? Or am I just
I don't
being
think
racist?
So. You're, that's again, racist.
Again, I'm
you
not
Arab.
It's just for the sake of joking.
You're acting like an Arab.
I'm not even... Arabs are Semitic, too. They can't be anti-Semitic unless they're self-hating.
Well, they don't like Jews, though, generally.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they should. I mean, I don't know.
Anyway, one. So here's the next division. West Bank and Gaza Strip settlers.
I know. They get extra guns.
No, not even. Do they?
They
get one handgun. So,
well, if you're in the Gaza Strip, you can get a gun. And if you're not, you can't, unless you're a statist or a jewelry dealer.
Right.
So,
right,
like, you know, people always make jokes about, like, you know, I don't want this, you know, like, there's a thing on the shield, like, you know, Vic Mackey, like, I want to regulate you drug dealers. You know, you make payoffs to me, and as long as this place doesn't end up as long as my section of L.A. doesn't look like the Gaza Strip, you can keep operating and paying me off. You know, it's kind of like they say, if you want a libertarian paradise, go to Somalia. You're like, the Gaza Strip is what they use, and people use as an example of, like, a mm-hmm. war zone in contemporary society. So if you live in a war zone, they'll let you have a gun.
One handgun. A resident, West Bank and Gaza Strip settlers. One, a resident in a military strategic buffer zone essential to the security of the state of Israel may own one handgun.
You're going to use shoot those.
A business
those,
owner in these geographic areas may own one handgun. I guess the Gazans only have rocks, so.
No, they have, well, Gaza Strip gets shot. Doesn't it get shot with missiles made out of, like, sewer tubes and gunpowder that aren't guided and just kind of fly over and don't explode and just land and break things?
I'm not sure if the Gazans, you know, the Palestinian Gazans, shoot those into the settlements in the Gaza Strip. I think they tend to shoot them into Israel proper, or, you know, what's now considered, you know, main Israel. I don't know what they call it, but not Gaza Strip. I think they try to launch them. And yeah, there was a big hubbub about how they had a much longer range, but they had a longer range because they took off any explosive. So it was just a pipe. Basically launching a pipe a few thousand yards into the enemy zone with nothing attached to it, just a pipe.
Yeah, and using like a rifle bullet primer to set it off and a nail or something.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, a medieval missile. Not that there was gunpowder in medieval. Well,
a step above a catapult, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically catapulting a sewer tube into your neighboring,
Which it's still wrong. It's still aggression. I'm not co-signing that you're right in your ability to launch into, you know, because it's not targeted. That can't be self-defense. That's trying to harm civilians, you know, because, yeah, you might not die, but if you get hit with a big pipe falling from the sky, it's going to hurt, and I guess you could die.
People die, do die from it.
Hit you in the head.
Do you know General Electric has some missile-guided defense system against that? I forget what it's called, but
Iron Dome.
Yeah, it costs like $1 billion, and it's supposed to hit those in the air before, and you know,
right?
It doesn't work very well, but
no,
General Electric sells them and makes them. General
of
Dynamics,
of course they do, because
that's
what it's all about in the end, isn't it? Is stuff like that, so you can give them fancy names and make a shit ton of money on them.
Yeah.
Ugh, I'm so sick of looking at Steve's wedding pics, and I'm all out of passive-aggressive comments. What else am I supposed to do at work all day?
Sick of stalking your ex on Facebook?
Yeah!
Are you all out of cute cats and autocorrect mishaps to loll at?
Duh!
Freedom Fiends to the rescue! The Fiends now have a blog. Read all about the latest tyranny today. Dream about lip pair. Laugh while Western civilization collapses. Just click on the cat icon to the right of freedomfiends.com. Freedom Fiends blog. Read it!
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. We have Freedom Fiends, Anarchy Gumbo, and two designs for Guns and Weed the Road to Freedom. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $6 for four buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Okay, we're recording again. I guess yep. I bring that up because some people think like the Gazans are an actual country with an army or something like that. And oh, poor Israel is the victim. But no, like Gaza no,
Israel,
is
Israel basically was formed by Jews leaving Nazi Germany and doing to Palestine what the Nazis were doing to, you know, to Poland.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think the best way I've heard it now, I think his name was Max Blumenthal. I'm not sure, but he's Jewish, and he makes the point that what Israel really is today is it's
Indian reservation.
It's a settler colonial movement. So it's like America in Indian days, or like South Africa in apartheid days.
Yeah, it's Indian reservation. It's what's outside the reservation. The Gaza Strip is the Indian reservation.
Is the reservation right? Yeah. Right. It's a bunch of non-natives moving to a geographical region, claiming it as their own, and having to deal with the indigenous population, which was the Palestinians. And he makes the point that, you know, now in America, it's sort of farther behind us. You know, we name sports teams after the people that we committed genocide on. You know, you have the Redskins, and they're cutesy, and it's far enough back in our head to where they're not a threat anymore. But in Israel, you know, it's ongoing. They're in the process of the ethnic cleansing and the genocide. And did you see that thing now that apparently as part of this I don't know if it, genocide is the right word, but ethnic cleansing. Basically, they want to get rid of all the people that are in the Gaza and the West Bank. So one of the things they do regularly is they destroy rainwater cisterns. So there's no actual state plumbing or you know, modern plumbing in a lot of the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. So they collect rainwater. The IDF will go around blowing those up to basically dehydrate the populations of the Gaza and the West Bank.
You know, a lot of places in the Middle East, the average American's view of them, or a common view in America, is like, oh, those people are living in the Stone Age. They're living in the Stone Age because of things like this, of like taking right. their rainwater and yes. blowing things up. And the Palestinians actually had a really advanced civilization with art, science. You know, they were kind of like almost ahead of England before, you know, the League of Nations, the UN, England and the US went in and devastated them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really important to note. I mean, most places like this, the reason they are in the Stone Age is because they're war-torn, and they're war-torn because of the state, right? It's not these – like, I want to bring this full circle here. It's not because we're just all so many different religions that we all just can't get along.
Yeah, and they were all killing each other over there occasionally before we all showed up, before, you know, the West showed up, but – all of the aggression against the West, or aggression, you know, violence against the West, is they consider it self-defense. You know, I mean, there was none of that really before World War One, before the English came in and started conquering mm-hmm. and said, you know, this is going, we're going to tell you what to do with your land, and we're yeah. going to move in a bunch of foreigners. You know, right. I mean, there's a lot of parallels.
Scott Horton was talking about this Yahoo article he read out of the Helmand province in Afghanistan, you know, where they tried to have the Afghan surge and give them the quote-unquote government in the box. You know, that was the big thing 2 years ago or something. That was
what's in
thing.
The box?
Is it government, like, apparently.
Is it like the box that you – it's probably very unlike the box that they have
in a Cracker Jack or a cereal box?
No, the box in the movie where the guy's riding the bomb. What's it called?
How I Learned to Love the Bomb, Dr. Yeah. Strangelove.
Yeah. 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 Remember when the Air Force pilots are about to bail out after they drop the nuke, they're looking through their survival box and it's like a bunch of speed, uppers, downers, nylons, lipstick. That's the opposite of government in a box. That's the government made it, but it's like that's a party in a box, man.
That party in a box, right.
Whether
right.
you can find a woman to use it with or not, you could make your own woman in a yeah. hotel room out of that box, out of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. But Scott made the point that these people in this Helmand province are saying they miss the Taliban. And the Taliban wasn't that great. They, like, you know, the Taliban did awful things and was very repressive. But that's how bad the Americans or some outsider ruling them is.
There were people who, after Prohibition, missed the mafia, because at least under the mafia, like, you know, you could pay off the local shop could pay them off. And literally, if anybody did anything to your shop, they'd be dead. So you had protection. Whereas once the mafia was gone, the police, you had to pay them anyway, but then the police would come in and mess with your shop and your patrons and you.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I guess that's the whole point is the culprit is the state because it's ineffective and unresponsive. And it's both of those things because they get all of their resources through force. So they're ineffective because they don't need to care about customer service or if you enjoy what they're doing to you. And they're unresponsive for the same reason, because they'll just, you pay them no matter what. It's a sad situation, in the whole Middle East. And yes, they are in the Stone Age, but, you know, you'd be in the Stone Age too, or we'd be in the Stone Age too, if the Chinese had battle carrier groups and drones flying over our skies and were trying to export their Chinese socialist democracy to us.
In a box.
In a box.
Governments love things in a box. Do you know about internet in a box?
No.
It's something that the CIA came up with, and I've seen a picture of the box in Wired magazine. It's the size of a very large suitcase. It's basically for countries where the local tyrant is not in favor with the US that week, and they're they're, you know, the local tyrant is blocking the internet, the CIA will send a guy in, put him up in a hotel room, and he will provide internet, a limited amount of internet, with this box wirelessly in a neighborhood, so people can tweet and organize to have their, you know,
an uprising
protest. The uprising. So the CIA can install their favored guy there for 20 years and then kill him like they usually do, like they did with
I was gonna say, if the CIA is doing that, it's because they have that ulterior motive.
Yeah, right? And it's basically, you know, it's like a little collapsible satellite dish that they point out the window at the satellite, and then it's some wireless routers that transmit internet, you know, through this satellite to the neighborhood.
Wow. Yeah, it is. It is just amazing that that can happen, right? The technology of that is amazing, and just think of the power of humanity to do something like that. And yet, think of all of the wasted power that's doing it for evil reasons. And the thing is, there'd be evil even in a free society, even in an anarchic society, but we would recognize it as evil. Most people would understand that it was evil and wouldn't give it legitimacy. The main problem is that this kind of evil thing, the average person sees and they're indoctrinated, so they don't call it evil. They call it public policy. That's the main thing that I think needs to change.
Yeah. That's so square. Policy so is so square.
Yeah.
What was it? We said something about central planning. Oh, that was – never mind. That was in our last episode.
Yeah. Stop trying to centrally plan the conversation, Mike.
I know. Do you know Howard Stern – ran for governor of New York on the Libertarian Party.
You were telling me that
in the 80s. And why? But the Libertarian Party put him up. You know, they picked him over some other real libertarian. And Howard Stern's platform was to reinstate the death penalty, stagger highway tolls to improve traffic flow, and limit road work to night hours. Boy, there's so much wrong with that from a libertarian standpoint. I mean, even like, okay. Reinstate the death penalty is not a libertarian thing. Basically saying the state should be able to murder. You know? And then his other two things were about roads.
Well, it's A, I don't think that's libertarian. And B, there is kind of a different flavor of libertarian that I think should be cut off. Like, it's not really a part of us. They may be fellow travelers in that they use similar language in the same word. But there's a cutoff, right? And I think true anarcho-capitalist or what I just – decide are true libertarians, you know, people who follow the non-aggression principle, are much different than sort of beltway libertarians and people like this, who it seems like all they want to do is make the government more efficient, which in the end just makes it more efficient at tyrannizing you.
A lot of Libertarian Party people were really upset that the Libertarian Party ran Bob Barr for president in 2008. And I actually voted for him. He's the last person I voted for president.
You didn't write Ron Paul in 2008?
Nope. Really? I was newly minted and I didn't really know what was going on.
Voted for Bob Barr?
Well, yeah.
See, nobody's perfect, folks.
And it was like, like he was on the ballot in California and Ron Paul wasn't. And I was like, well, I'm not going to write someone in. I'm going to vote for the guy, you know, that's on the thing that they tell me I can. So, but yeah. He's a really, you know, he used to be a neocon.
Yeah.
And then saw the light and changed. And some argue whether or not he changed or whether he just really wanted to, be relevant. But he is actually, at least in what he says on his blog, is actually way more libertarian than Howard Stern was with what he was running under.
Yeah, but I think the whole party has had to shift more towards anarchism as recently, just because it's so much more the state's so much more oppressive, so we see the problem so much more, and B, I think people are talking about it so much more. So
do you ever see the Robot Chicken sketch about the Libertarian Party? It shows it's like five shots of them doing their, you know, okay, we're gonna win this time, from like 1971 to like now. And in the beginning it's like, you know, two fairly young guys with their hot wives, and there's about, you know, 50 people in the room and they're all cheering loudly, and it goes on like the guys get older, the wives leave them, the number of people in the room goes down to like five, and in the last scene, like one of them just shoots himself in the head on stage.
yeah, man. I mean, it's a silly concept to begin with, and I guess maybe people didn't realize that at the beginning, but it's almost like getting a band together so you can sing songs about how great, about how much you hate music and how you never want to sing or play instruments.
Although I think it was historically important, because I think it opened up the conversation, and if it had to go that way, whatever, you know. But and you'd probably argue even that, but I'll say that even if that was true, that they have become,
it's so a dead end now.
It's a dead end. Yeah.
It's a dead end.
And they tend to run people like Howard Stern who are idiots, or like the guy they ran in Wyoming for governor who, you know, was a racist and not libertarian. And even he told me personally, I'm not a libertarian, but blah, 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 blah. You know,
I know who you're talking about. He's somebody else we've made fun of on the cast before for horrible things.
Yeah, that long haired weirdo Mike something. Mm-hmm.
No, I thought it was a different guy. Okay, maybe there's more than one. But yeah, man, and they ran Gary Johnson for president. And I was really sad that some.
Actually, are you talking about the guy that's in the Guns and Weed movie? One of the guys in the government self defense class. I forget his name, but I think one of those guys is a guy who ran for governor of Wyoming at some point under Libertarian Party.
I'm not talking about him. Let's just get off it. I was talking about somebody else. But yeah, man. I mean, they ran Gary Johnson in 2012, a guy who didn't even probably know who Murray Rothbard was.
And they ran him against Ron Paul, basically. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose they did. I think they tried to get Ron Paul to be on the Libertarian ticket, though. I think some people in the Libertarian Party were asking Ron Paul.
And I think Ron Paul didn't because he wanted to be in the debates. Mm-hmm. I really think so. I mean, I think that was the smart thing to do. And Gary Johnson had some real half measure endorsement. Like, he endorsed Ron Paul in the primary and then said, like, I won't endorse him if he wins the primary because I'm going to run against him.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I don't know. I guess maybe Gary Johnson's heart's in the right place. Maybe it is.
He's a litter bug.
He seems kind of uneducated on how it all works, or how it all should work. I guess not how it all should work, because we're not centrally planning things, but how it all shouldn't work, which is exactly how it works now.
Let's play some music and take a little breather.
Yeah, I think I need a refreshing beverage.
So why don't you play the play a song and then play the Christmas ad.
No, I'm going to play the Christmas ad first because it's a minute 30, and then I'll play a song.
What song are you going to play?
I don't know. I'll figure it out while I'm playing the ad, but here's the ad.
All right.
Admit it. You hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives?
Most of them are statists anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the Fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com.
Dirty Bomb Entertainment, DJ Subsonic, Nima V, the lyrical terrorists. Y'all know how we do. You know, I own myself. Nobody else can tell me what to do. I hope you feel the same way. It's like Pimp C say, they can lock my body, but them hoes can't take my mind. Never that. It's getting thicker than dreadlocks. They treat us like we dread Scott. Don't wanna see the feds. Pop will be the one that bed stops. Don't get in trouble, cause I talk shit to their mascot. Freaking busybodies need to go and buy an ascot. Telling me you own me, then making sure I'm taxed out, maxed out, deep indebted from the easy credit that the Fed embedded. Then they bet it I'll be copacetic if they were the medic. But forget it, the people are getting pissed, blowing up like someone let it. They won't control and fed it, but y'all know that smells faded like the crap hole that we're headed to. If they don't let me do me and you do you, and all the guns in the government won't amount to a 22. If they keep on stomping on Amendment Number 2, and we don't even need you, take your welfare and your brainwashing free school. And y'all are so see-through, easy to see you. It's each nobody owns me, y'all haters don't care. I own me, yeah. So back the fuck off. Nobody owns me, no, y'all haters don't. I own me, yeah, so back the fuck off. I make my own rules, take my own booze. You ain't in my shoes, no, you ain't get to choose. I ain't paying dues, I pay them for myself. Don't expect shit from me, and I ain't need your help. In case you didn't know, this song is for the parasites, the feeders that bleed us and treat us like they're the handed with the dice. No utopian paradise do we have from any planet. World too complex for any man to comprehend. All the supply and again, all the demand. When the few control the view, their mistakes are multiplied. The decisions should be ours, like our bodies. Let's take back our lives. Only a slave if you submit, and y'all know I got some fight. And this ain't racist, it's for blacks, whites, and Asians, Middle Eastern people, Latino, and everyone that wants to be free. So we'll even let it slide. If you're emo, I never sign no social contract. I'm about to have to repo myself for my health and my wealth. Put your bills back on the shelf. Capitol Hill can go to hell. We should put them folks in jail. We could live our lives ourselves. Nobody owns me, y'all haters don't care. I own me, yeah, so back the fuck off. Nobody owns me, no, y'all haters don't. I own me, yeah, so back the fuck off. I make my own rules, take my own tools. You ain't in my shoes, no, you ain't get to choose. I ain't pay you dues, I pay them for myself. Don't expect shit from me, and I ain't need your help. Knows what's best for me. I knock them out, they knock the name, cause in my three. Could be who say so, I take aim at tier in three. Branches, and act just like geriatric sitters, knees. But really, you'll get beat up if you don't follow the eater. Log, living, worse, Rhea. But where can I go if this whole world is socialist? Though we know that it fell for the Soviets. It's 1984, people please notice this. Facts, feed it, time to overthrow the ticks. It's in the declaration, say, so choose to be a free man. Governments were over it. Nobody owns me, y'all haters don't. I own me, yeah, so back the fuck.
fuck off. Nobody owns me. Y'all don't. I own me. Yeah, so back the fuck off. Take my rules. Take my tools. You ain't in my shoes. Ain't shoes. I ain't paying dues. Paying for myself. Vex me. And I ain't need your help.
Yow.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support only a phone call away 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Yo.
What'd it do?
Yeah. It do. It do and it be.
So, sure
yeah, that was I Own Me. That was I Own Me by Nima Vidati going all the way back to 2009.
Yeah. And I was chopping it up a little bit with just
the heard that. Using. I thought it was a mistake at first, but it sounded cool and it kept happening. So I knew it was you doing your magic.
Yeah. True that.
So the market always finds a way. You see this headline? I posted the link. Drug mm-hmm. smugglers yep. shoot drugs across border with cannon.
Isn't that the best thing ever?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a freedom fix if I ever heard one. And, yeah. You know, it's not like this is the only time we've seen this. They also, dig tunnels underground. Like Jay-Z says, we getting money up under you.
Did they have drones yet? I know they have submarines.
Who, the cartels?
Yeah. I mean, drones, you know, not for defense, but for sending things across borders. It seems like they can work.
I don't know, man. I guess... drones don't have a big carrying capacity.
Yeah,
right?
That's what our friend who's a model airplaner said. But yeah. You could probably do it with balloons if the wind was going the right direction.
Like maybe some concentrated liquid cocaine or something.
Yeah, but this is they're using a cannon and shooting, you know, can of soup size projectiles full of drugs like 500 yards over the border and then someone collects them on the other side.
Yeah, and I'm sure they got some nice trigonometry or trajectory, some
rocket science,
some nice math going on.
It ain't
on
rocket science. Oh, wait, it is rocket science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Sorry. All in the furtherment of meeting human desires, right? So that's who would build a road to be somebody who would meet human desires, right? Who would supply the drugs? Anybody who can meet those desires, however they can meet those desires, whether it's digging a tunnel underground or shooting them with a cannon.
Somebody probably find a way to like make roads by shooting something out of a cannon, you know, like in The Simpsons where Homer wants to be an inventor and invents a shotgun that puts makeup on a woman and he tries it on his wife. And she's like, Homer, you have it set on whore. Although it kind of looks more like clown whore than whore.
Right. Clown whore. Yeah. Well, or like in Sonic the Hedgehog, when you jump in the cannon and it shoots you over half the level, so you get there faster, right? We shoot ourselves out of cannons into houses or shopping malls. Yeah, I mean, obviously that's kind of silly, but the point is, by any means necessary, the market will take care of human desires. And it's not the market if they're violent means, so that means is excluded, you know, through the philosophy of it. But things like this are a beautiful example. Another example is prison, right? People still get drugs and things that they want in prison. And back to the whole Holocaust is people in their ghetto, not their ghettos, but what came next? The concentration camps. You know, there would be people who would collect things and trade them, and there were little economies on what little resources they had. There was even a market at play amongst the people in concentration camps. Who would, you know, hoard some little pieces of food and trade them for favors and things like that. So the market will always find a way to meet those desires, no matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the true through hell's leader snow. Post office workers don't have any incentive to do it like that, because they all get paid $25 an hour. They can't lose their jobs. And they get retirement. So
is
they're
that
not
how much they
be
get? They get $25 an hour?
They get a crap ton. Yeah, I think the full-time ones get something in that range.
Wow. For walking. For taking a walk, for exercising every day.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's what I've heard, at least, because I've got a family member who's I guess I've got a couple family members who are postal workers. And they do pretty well for themselves. And one of them, at least, isn't. Well, I guess I don't want to say that, but
you shouldn't get
much
them a Christmas
much
present.
More money than I think they could make in the market. Much should, more money.
Don't,
than
don't
than
get
I
them a Christmas present. Shun them, or else give them like a burned copy of Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom.
Yeah. They just say I'm crazy. That's the problem with horizontal liberation of some people is when you're that far gone, all you immediately dismiss it as crazy if it's not something that Fox News told you or something that CNN or Rachel Maddow told
but
you.
But The Fiends is a gift to the future, and that is the name of today's episode, because we are doing this. You know, they always say think of the children. We're thinking of the children. I'm hoping that somebody is still torrenting this, or, you know, whatever the technology is then, you know, when kids who are being born right now are old enough to listen, which is about 8 years old.
I hope for more than that, though. I think the loftiest I get is I hope that in the future this stuff will be so common sense that people won't even need the fiends anymore. It'll just be like, oh yeah, they're saying the basic premise of our world.
And then
they'll look back on us for reference, maybe. But it
no,
won't
they'll
be
look
like
on, they'll look back on us as the way that people now look back on obsolete philosophers like Thomas Jefferson, and there'll be fiends humpers. There'll be like people will be so advanced in 20 or 30 years that like people who still quote the fiends or listen to the fiends or try to spread the fiends, they'll be like, really, man, we're so beyond that. That is so square. I hope. Right. I hope. I would. That's the only acceptable. Like to me, that's not the only acceptable, but that is a reality of us being irrelevant and not liked that I would dig.
That you would dig.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
You ever see the South Park where Cartman really wants this new video game that's coming out next week?
The Wii. He wants a Wii, so he freezes himself.
Yeah. And he wakes up in the future and like he gets a Wii at an antique store and there's no like technology they can plug it into because everything's advanced so much. I don't think that'll happen though with spoken audio as MP3s because it's so backward compatible, you know? And there'll always be some hacker who'll make it like an emulator to play it. You know, like now, you know, you can get like Windows emulators to play Pong on your computer. Well, there'll be someone who will make like an emulator for an MP3 player that'll work in your, you know, whatever's embedded in your brain that acts as the computer then.
Hell, much more than Pong. And that's the thing about MP3s is, yeah, they are digital, but as long as it's just ones and zeros, you can do it. Like I play Sega Saturn on an emulator. Any video game system in the world you want to play, you can play. You just got to get a hold of the ones and zeros that are the program of the game. And because MP3 is nothing but ones and zeros in a file, as long as people have computers, they'll be able to listen to them, I would imagine.
There was this whole thing a few years ago of companies that make recording equipment selling this, what they called was a new technology that they called future-proof recording. And it was basically, it was this really weird, it was like one bit recording, but it was with a really high, sampling rate. Like, it was some weird math that that I didn't see the advantage of, and I think they're pulling the wool over people's eyes. It was basically they said that, you know, the technology now will be obsolete, and 16-bit 44.1 hertz, you know, joint stereo MP3s or waves will be completely obsolete. Now, what that's not taking into account is the range of human hearing. I mean, literally, mm-hmm. a 16-bit 44.1 wave file has the maximum of what 98% of humans can hear. Now, they mm-hmm. do record in studios at 96K instead of, or 96-bit instead of 24-bit. But it's really kind of an emperor's new clothes things. And a lot of engineers who say they can hear the difference probably can't. And engineers might be able to hear the difference, but the average person can't. Now,
right.
the average person can hear the difference between a crappy recording with today's technology and a good recording with today's technology, like the way people say the Fiends sound really good. And they're not necessarily recording engineers. They're just listeners.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they may not be able to say why it sounds better. They may not even say this sounds better than that, but they will listen to the thing that sounds better than the thing right. that doesn't.
Subconsciously, so, even.
I just posted a link to a thread about 1-bit advantage future-proof recording, and it was total horse crap. You know, it's not like protocols like HDMI versus, you know, USB 2 or USB 3, and it's not like mechanical differences and delivery format differences, like, you know, VHS versus DVD, where there is a difference. It's literally like, if you're going to make recordings that advance beyond, you know, 16-bit 44.1 hertz waves, which is what we make our MP3s from, you're going to have to do something to the human ear and brain. So we're pretty much future-proof, I would say, and we are a gift to the future.
I think the term future-proof is
specious.
Yeah, I think that's a red flag for BS, because
thank you.
Who knows what future-proof is? Because I'm thinking, yeah, maybe with digital stuff, but why does everything? There's no guarantee that everything will always be digital in computers. I mean, it seems to me like the next step is finding out how your brain moves neurons to make what sounds like sounds and what looks like images.
But I'm going to resist anything like that, because that's going to involve interfacing electronically with the human brain. And, you know, I don't like the way the government spies on what I search on the web now. You think I'm going to let them plug into my brain?
Why does the government have to do it? You're such a Luddite.
Yeah.
I mean, there's examples of this in Beezer's work on Quantum Vibe, and I think maybe in Escape on Here, although
libertarian fiction says you're wrong, Michael. But, you know, fiction is often the blueprint for fact. I mean, the cell phone is based on the Star Trek communicator, and iPad is based on whatever those, you know, the thing the doctor would hold.
Whatever vision Jobs had when he was tripping on acid.
When he's tripping on acid and getting caught for basically being a pirate by selling boxes that allowed you to make free phone calls, and then saying, someday I will use my technology to crush competition in the market with the same methods that are being used on me now that I don't like.
Right. Which, again, was the state that allowed him to do that, not anything else.
But, you know, his answer would probably be, well, Nima and Michael from Beyond the Grave, I'm Steve Jobs. Well, Nima and Michael, you know, I grew up. I had to become a statist. He was a really weird statist, though. I mean, people have actually called him libertarian, but because he did things like drove his Mercedes without a license plate, you know. But that's not libertarian when you're acting the way he is. Like, you know,
well, the thing is, with all his patent stuff, he would probably argue, well, I had to because I'm a businessman, and I may not like the rules, but I have to play the game by them. I didn't write the rules, which is, I think it's an argument for the taking down of the state, because if you have a structure of these centrally planned rules and regulations, people will still seek their own best interests. And if they have to use the rules obnoxiously to seek their own self-interest, they will. But if there aren't those tools of the state, then they'll have to seek their own self-interest peaceably and voluntarily.
I really wonder, in the lack of intellectual property right laws, where society would be at right now. You know, a lot of people say we'd be living in ditches, poking berries up our nose to survive. But I think the opposite. I think that hobbyists would still do all the research and would be, you know, not quelled by not being able to use other technology to the point where all drugs would cost 8 cents a dose, cancer would be cured, we'd be flying in cars, and the government would be completely irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and there was actually some amateurs discovered a star recent or something. What was it? I can't find it. I have so many notes. I don't care about this crap, but people do, you know, scientists do things. I mean, Kevin McKernan, without government funding or, you know, with private funding, like sequenced the DNA, the genome of the marijuana plant. And he was the first to do it. And he's a Fiend fan. And we actually took him from, and it's a very common journey, Ron Paul to Alex Jones to the Fiends.
And that's work that not necessarily, I mean, the government would have never approved funding for anything like that in any kind of plant thing.
They would have approved it to secretly do it and then patent it.
Ah.
and then they charge anyone who grows pot with patent violations on top of whatever else.
Mm, yeah, yeah, exactly. They'd use it to the public's disadvantage.
Well, the United States government actually filed a patent on medical marijuana at some point, which is really bizarre. It hasn't been used for anything to crush anybody yet, but it could be.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, man, I agree with you completely. And I do think that sans all of this regulation, we would probably be already at the point where recording technology that we use would be obsolete, and there would literally be like a plug-in that your neurons would hear what happened in the room exactly as a human ear would have heard it if it were there.
Well, you know, that would all actually work if there was Hassel Doctrine, and if anyone wants to look up on the glossary what Hassel Doctrine is. Basically, it's an extrapolation of the Second Amendment. It's basically anybody can use any gun to shoot anybody who tries to take their rights away, you know, which is what they were going for with the Second Amendment, but they watered it down to get all the different states and their different levels of statism to sign on, you know, the original 13 colonies.
The important thing for that to work, though, is getting people to recognize first what is aggression and not. Because right now, people don't recognize government aggression as bad or even aggression.
Or as aggression, yeah.
They don't even recognize it as aggression. That's why it's legitimate. That's why they legitimize it. And the fact that it's legitimate is the main difference. So if people can – if we got everybody to understand that taxation was theft, or a big majority, or even a big minority, to see that taxation was theft and that law enforcement was the slaves whipping the backs of the public, I mean, we'd be pretty much there, right? That's the main thing. That's the main
work. Taxation being theft. Anybody out there who smokes, who buys packs of cigarettes instead of rolling your own or growing your own or whatever, I noticed this week with the new carton I bought. You know, cigarettes have always had the tax stamp paid thing. They've always had the UPC code on the side. But on these Marlboros I'm looking at, next to the UPC code, now there's also a QR code. You know, like those weird new ones.
Does it go to like an image of a decrepit lung or something?
I don't know. I don't have a scanner for it. I don't have a cell phone that can do that, or I don't want to install the crap that does it. But I'm wondering if
it's just an app and you can keep it off all the time.
If anybody out there can do that and scan it and let me know what it is. Do you have it on yours?
I do. But I'm not going to buy a pack of cigarettes. I guess
I wonder. Well, you could do it in a store. Probably. Well, no, because it was actually covered by a dot on the plastic. I had to pull the plastic off it to do it, to see it. I'm wondering, and maybe they cover it with a dot for some reason, but I'm wondering if it's just replicating the information in the barcode or if it's something new, like, you know, goes to a picture of a rotten lung or something.
Yeah, because there was that
– somebody said it downloads Stuxnet when you scan it.
Stuxnet, yeah. Well, wasn't there a law saying that – I think a judge struck this down, but there was some regulation that was going to go into effect where cigarette sellers had to put some kind of obnoxious big image on the box.
They do that in England now. They do that already in England. And
like an image of what tobacco does to you or something.
Literally, like someone smoking through a hole in their lung. They have that on the cigarette packs now. When I was in England – last time I was in England, or the only time I was in England, was with the DIY or Die movie tour when I was touring Lefty Anarchist Squats. It wasn't that bad yet. It was in 2005, but the warning said, you know, instead of warning, cigarette smoking can, what does it say here? It says, Quitting smoking now greatly reduces serious risks to your health. And it's in tiny gold letters that are hard to read because they're on white. In England, it was giant white block letters on black background. And it said, warning, cigarette smoking will kill you or can kill you. What is wow. that, man?
That's my phone. Hmm. Sorry. That's
well, I want to talk about I want to talk about lefty anarchists. I've been reaching across the aisle to lefty anarchists.
Can we stay on cigarette topic for a little
sure,
bit longer?
Sure.
I was curious, and I tried to look it up just now, but I'm so upset that nobody sells loose cigarettes anywhere. Like,
I think
that
it's illegal some places. Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
I'm looking at this thing, it looks like in Chicago or in Illinois.
In San Francisco, every Korean grocery in San Francisco when I lived there sold Lucy's for like 25 cents.
Lucy's. Yeah, that's what they call them. Yeah. And there was a place in Wyoming, a liquor store I used to go to, that would sell Lucy's. And it was a great thing to behold.
Yeah, basically a law against that. I mean, that's a law against poor people is what that is. That's we don't want.
It really is.
We yeah. you know, it's one step away from outlawing feeding homeless people. It really is, which yeah. you know yeah. New York City's done and a lot of other places have done.
It's also it's a law against people who want to quit, right? I mean, forcing people to buy 20 cigarettes every time they have a nicotine,
you know,
craving,
I wouldn't be surprised.
That's anti-productive
if
for the nannies.
The
even.
Tobacco lobbies probably had something to do with those laws.
Yeah, I bet secretly. And I think the tech it looks like there's
and then they get but then they get signed and passed by politicians who believe that it's an anti-smoking law when it's really yeah. a pro-smoking law.
Well, I did a Computer Kill Flanders search, and the first thing that comes up for the question was, why can't I buy loose cigarettes? The first thing that comes up is a City of Chicago press release of the businesses they're going to close down, and it looks like they want to – what the first one is for selling loose cigarettes with no stamps. Selling unstamped cigarettes. So I guess that's how they justify not selling Lucy's, is because there's no tax stamp.
Well, the tax is already paid on them, though. Although
it's true, but there's no stamp on it. So
I guess there's probably some situation where somebody bought them cheap without a tax stamp on an Indian reservation and then took them to the city and then sold them to Korean grocers who sell them loose.
Yeah, and I guess that's the whole point of the tax stamp in the first place, right? Is so that the government controls the point of sale and how it's sold.
Well, if they think that they can print, you know, micro serial numbers on bullets, wouldn't it be a lot easier to print a serial number or a tax stamp on the side of a cigarette with carcinogenic ink, with radioactive ink? puts the Stuxnet virus into your brain.
Right, right.
To listen to the MP3s you're hearing.
Yeah, I suppose it would, but again, because it's not a market that controls this, it's a state that controls this, you don't have that kind of responsiveness. You know, there's no market because people have guns pointed at them to keep them from selling loose cigarettes. Entrepreneurs can't go out there and be like, well, hey, I make a bunch of money if I sell, you know, I buy a pack for $5 or less because they're getting it at cost or whatever their cost is as opposed to what they sell it to you for. And I'm buying a pack for $5. I'm selling each loose for 75 cents or whatever. I'm making a hell of a profit on this. You don't let that voluntary interaction take place, and as a result, the entrepreneur who works at the liquor store or the convenience store is poorer because he misses out on that opportunity cost. And your average smoker or your poor smoker instead has to buy a whole pack of Pall Mall or whatever cheap they can get a whole pack, and your person who doesn't want to buy a whole pack but just wants to enjoy a cigarette once in a while has to buy a whole pack. It seems like it's a lose situation.
All right, I got a joke.
Yeah. Okay.
Police officer pulls a man over. Sir, I noticed you were swerving and driving erratically. Man says, yes, I was. A while back, I noticed a man with a gun following me. It made me nervous. Officer says, what did this man look like? What kind of car was he driving? Man says, he was driving a black and white Crown Victoria, and he looked like you. And, you know, if you tell that joke to an anarchist, they get it before you tell the punchline.
Yeah, but yeah, I knew where you're going.
It's a good one for statists.
Yeah, yeah. To help smooth the road to their enlightenment, ideally.
Well, speaking of which, I want to talk about lefty anarchists.
Okay.
And reaching across the aisle to them. Which really I think is the only aisle. There's only two aisles that are legitimate to reach across. One is anarchist to minarchist, you know, reaching to pull them to our side of the aisle, not to work with them.
And the other is leftist anarchist to anarcho-capitalist.
Yeah, and I do think They would argue with me on this generally, probably. I guess I'm speaking to them collectively, but they some of them have argued with me on this, where I say that they aren't true anarchists and we are, and we'll bring them over to the final, you know, the last mile.
They do the same thing to us, though.
They I know they do.
You guys think people can own property? God, you're not anarchists.
And, you know, I've had a problem with any most discussions I've had with any syndicalist anarchist or lefty anarchist or commie anarchist, because they basically, I don't know how they're going to initiate their stateless society without pointing a gun at me, because I am not going to
give up your property.
Yeah. Whatever, you know, voluntary reindoctrination they want to have out there in the world, I'm either not going to listen to it, or when I listen to it, I'm not going to be swayed to, yes, I should open up my door and let stinky lefty anarchist come in my house all day long and use my podcasting equipment while I'm trying to sleep and let them camp in my backyard and let them live and frolic in my many acres, my many 0.02 acres.
And some would maybe say, well, it's not like that, man. I mean, you can own your like toothbrush and your computer and that, but I don't see any consistency in where the line is drawn. And maybe I haven't read enough of it. And I know I haven't, because I haven't, but
you won't.
So yeah, and I probably won't. But I'd love it if somebody would help enlighten me on it. But from what I see, that's the main problem with lefty anarchists is they don't take property ownership. And property ownership to me is a natural outgrowth of the fact that you own yourself. Because you own yourself, you own whatever you make and whatever you acquire through voluntary means. Whatever it is, as long as it's voluntary, you own it because your own human action caused it to be yours.
Yeah, but I don't need to read it, because I've absorbed it. I've been around a lot of them. We got a fiend caller here.
Maybe it's a lefty anarchist. This could be good.
Hello, fiend. Who are you?
Hey, it's Dalton.
Hey, Dalton. What's up,
man?
I don't know, man. What's up? I randomly decided to call because I can't listen to you guys while I'm driving anymore, because you're not on No Agenda anymore. And I was like, I wonder what Michael and Nima are up to.
No,
so I randomly called.
Why could you listen to them while driving, but you can't listen to us while driving? It's the same technology.
Maybe I just haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah.
But,
it's
probably more likely, but I have a little app where I can search, a list of streaming internet radio stations.
Can you manually add one in?
You know, I was thinking about that, but that would take more attention than I'm willing to give while driving in traffic.
Can your app deal with stuff from Apple streaming, iTunes streaming radio? Because we are on that.
I really don't know. I don't know.
You know, if this was somebody we didn't know and like Dalton, I'd hang up on him right now. I'd be like, so you just decided to call in and interrupt us without knowing what we're talking about? All right. So
what are you talking about?
Well, we're talking about
anarchists.
We're going to talk about we'll let you stay, because you made a really cool image that we're going to use for today's podcast. It's the clean all the things lady saying, build all the roads. So we'll let you stay for a minute. What do you think about lefty anarchists? What do you think about the problem of lefty anarchists in today's society?
I think the majority of lefty anarchists are well-meaning, but kind of like some anarchists, I think they haven't quite gotten over the violence bug.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't necessarily paint them as violent, although I have been encouraging them to use PGP encryption like we use, because they seem to be more of a target for the state than we are, whether they're violent or not. Yeah. Most of them are not violent, but I think the state basically looks at them as like Abby Hoffman, Bernadette Dorn types, and the state looks at us as like bow tie wearing economist types.
Yeah, I mean, there's a common joke between lefty anarchists and anarcho-capitalists that anarcho-capitalists only exist on the internet. So I think that may be the reason why the government does more against the lefties.
Ouch.
Because they tend to do more physically, at least.
Well, I think they tend to. I think they tend to go out in the street and yell more, whereas we tend to like watch it from a powerful telescope from our many acres and go ha 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 ha.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of ANCAPs and volunteers doing stuff in Keene, and, you know, they're getting a lump on the head. So I think it's just a matter of whether or not you go out and do stuff, really.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I've been trying to reach across the aisle to them. My buddy Krizzle, who makes our buttons, is an anarcho-syndicalist, and I actually designed some buttons for him and said he could use them and not pay me, just make them and sell them, because that's the way to get stuff done. And they are it's the name of a Fiends episode. It's State Speech is Hate Speech. And he made some that I wouldn't wear because they have Hitler on them. You know, it says State Speech, and it's got a picture of the U.S. Capitol building, and then it says is Hate Speech, and it's got Hitler saluting. I don't wear stuff with Hitler because people really misunderstand it. I used to wear a Nazi punk's fuck off banner with a swastika with a line through it. The armband came in the first pressing of that Dead Kennedy single. And I used to wear it when I was, you know, 19-year-old punk rocker. And like, people would just see the swastika and they'd go, "Ew, a Nazi, what are you doing?" You know, they wouldn't see the red line through it. They didn't get it. But, so I designed some, some other ones for him that are just straight text. But I hope you make some. And I told him to make two designs, one black and yellow and one red and yellow. You know, one for the lefties and one for the righties. You know, not the righties, but one for the anarcho-syndicalists and one for the anarcho-capitalists. And he did, and it's pretty awesome. Like, I told him the idea, and the next day he had them for sale up on his site, which I think is pretty cool.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what that reminds me of? Not too long ago on Reddit, somebody posted that they had made a little voluntarious V lapel pin. And they would wear it around all day. And they actually got into conversations with people like in gas stations and just, you know, wherever he would go, people would be like, "What's that thing?" And then he could talk to them about voluntarism. So stuff like that does work, you know. So if you have Fiends buttons, wear them.
Yep.
And all you Fiends out there.
Yeah, and I'm about to order some more. I was going to have a pregame show with Nima, but maybe after you get off the phone, I'll do it live on here, because I know how Nima loves to talk financing on the Fiends live, because we are the most transparent podcast in the world. I'm going to let you go here. You got anything else left to say? Any follow-up closing arguments?
Oh, I just wanted to thank you for plugging the Decline of Fate on Facebook.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I appreciate that.
Cool, man.
I'll let you guys go.
Figure out how to get us live streaming. If you want, you can IM me later about it, and I'll offer suggestions.
Yeah, I would say just go to the website and click on the Listen Now. That'll take you straight to our streaming link if you've got a browser on your smartphone.
That blue
That'd probably be the easiest way to do it. That's actually what I do.
I did do that on my phone, but nothing happened. Like, it started playing, like the counter, you know, the timer started counting for the length of the audio and all that, but no sound came out. So I just got to figure out why not.
Well, if you go to the link that says streaming audio below that, that's got the picture of the chick, and it goes to actually like right above her on the front page, there's four little icons. One is for Windows Media Player. One is for QuickTime. One is for Real Audio, and one is for something else, and Winamp. And one of those four will probably work on your phone. It's an Android phone, right?
That's right.
Yeah, I'd try the Winamp one first, but try all four of them.
Okay.
Yep.
All right,
man.
Thanks, man.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye.
Peace.
Yep. Steve Jobs is rolling over in his grave. Android? No. Although this is the rare case where it seems like the Apple product that you use, the iPhone, can actually do it better than Android. It's usually not
that way.
I don't
use an iPhone. I've got an Android.
Uh-huh.
And I love my Android. For the most part. But, okay, so back to the lefties. I feel like the main problem to me is they don't understand how private property and anarchy or freedom are the same thing.
They blame corporations without realizing corporations as a tyrannical thing as they are now would not exist in the lack of government.
Right, and I feel like that's the same problem lefties in general have. So
yeah, it's just taking the state out of it. But they don't realize that if they take the state out of it, that's not a problem.
Right. Well, I think it's a general economic, I don't want to say ignorance because I don't want to hate on our brethren, but I don't want to say stupidity either, but I feel like it's a lack of education about economics that leads to these things. Like, the same guy I took a ride home from at work, you know, he was like, "Oh, anarchist, that's cool." And then he started talking to me like about Burning Man, which I guess is some big festival that a bunch of hippies go to. And he was like, and nobody has, money. They all go, and it's a sharing society. And you know, some
it's
people
a bumming
fill up
society.
Your cups. And I was like, well, what happens if somebody comes and doesn't bring anything and just wants to get all the free booze and drugs and food? And he's like, oh, those are called sparkling ponies or something like that. Like, there was like a name for them. It was like sparkling unicorn. I don't even remember what it was. And I was like, why? Why the etymology? And he couldn't give me an answer. He's like, but yeah, they're just not cool, man. And well,
Burning Man is not a stateless society. It may look like one on the outskirts, but the people who own the trademark on the name, and yes, I said that right, are actually really litigious about people filming media there and selling it. They will send you lawyer letters and stomp you and say, no, only we have the right to film at Burning Man and sell it.
Right, right. But I felt like from what this guy was telling me, his concept of how the world would work in freedom was everybody would just give everybody free stuff all the time. And I was trying to sort of lead him to water and say, okay, I said, well, what if somebody brought a bunch of shitty art and that was their contribution, something that nobody wanted, like a necklace that was just a string and cat.
Everyone would give him an A for effort and go, oh, that's so sweet. Here, have the backwash from my homemade mead.
Maybe.
And, you know, I think Maybe. We saw where that ends up. In my discussion of that movie about the 60s hippie commune, you know, it ends up with centrally planned sex and the artist being told she can't paint because it's too individual. And then everyone starves to death during the winter after accidentally killing their cow while deciding what to do with it.
Right, right, right. Yeah, yeah. So I guess they just sort of have the wrong solution to the whole thing because they don't understand that ownership of things isn't the problem. And yes, you know, there are big power groups that own most of the wealth in the world, but that's not a problem of ownership. That's a problem of the state. You don't have to remove ownership from life to remove that. You have to remove the state.
I really like the term voluntarism as a sort of backdoor to get the anarcho-syndicalists interested in anarcho-capitalism, because the term anarcho-capitalism to most people pretty much sounds like the two worst things in the world combined. And to anarcho-syndicalists, anarcho-capitalism sounds like taking the best thing in the world and marring it with the worst thing in the world. But voluntarism is basically the same thing, but it's kind of a backdoor verbal method for getting them to look at it.
Yeah. I kind of also like market anarchism.
Yeah.
But
I mean, they do like selling weeds and, you know, art made out of cat turds, so
art made out of cat turds. Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess what I was trying to get out with that was the
varnished cat turds polished
was getting rid of the labor theory of value, because I think that that's a big economic misconception that leads people to these lefty kinds of things. The idea that if you put work, something is worth how much work you put into it, which is not true because you
it's
don't
worth
make
what people will pay for it.
It's worth what people will pay for it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a thing. I mean, think about like a smartphone. You know, it's what did you pay for your phone?
I think like $100, and then they gave me a $50 rebate, which they actually gave me, which I was really
but that involved a subscription, right? You had it was to get
2-year contract.
You know,
yes.
Let's look at something.
So it involved me signing a contract and $100.
Let's look at something that's not not attached to upselling you or getting you to buy. You know, basically what that is even if you don't have to buy the subscription, it's like, you know, they don't make the money selling the razors. They make the money selling the blades, you know, back before disposable razors. It's like they actually lost money selling the thing that holds the blade, but they make up for it in the blades because you have to keep buying them. It's like a subscription model.
Maybe this is an example, and maybe this is what you're trying to get at. Is so there was a laptop that was like top of the line, super fancy, had all the bells and whistles in 2008. It's never been touched. It's still in the box, brand new in the sense that it is never – human hands have never touched it. It's still in the cellophane. In 2012 – it's not worth what it was in 2008.
Well, let's take something even easier, like that doesn't involve a depreciation by technology advancements. But, you know, an iPhone, everybody wants one except me. And they're around $500. So an iPhone probably costs about $22 to make, you know, with the Chinese slave labor they use. But it's worth $500 because people will pay that for it. Now, what about a really crappy painting that someone lovingly spends a year making? You know, full time for a year making that's really ugly and nobody wants it. It's not worth more than that iPad. It's worth far less than $22, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the idea that people should be paid, that the value assigned to something should be paid by what it takes to make it labor and parts wise is really a entitled view. It's a view of the world owes me a living, you know. It's not how the world works. It's based on demand.
Right, right. And I think that that's a central problem with any kind of leftist philosophy is
I actually had an argument on YouTube on the comments of our Guns and Weed movie in the section where someone at the medical marijuana plant in Denver was talking about, you know, and we make sure that none of the pot costs more than $38 an eighth. And someone was like, $38 an eighth, that's a ripoff. These people are capitalists. It costs like a dollar to grow an eighth of pot. And I'm like, well, you're not factoring in everything else they do, including dealing with the government regulation and the
chance
that the feds could come in and point guns at their head at any time and steal it all. $38 an eighth for pot is pretty reasonable. I mean, it works out to like a dollar a dose, if that. And, you know, I don't like pot, but people who like pot, a dollar a dose is pretty reasonable for what you get out of it.
Yeah, yeah. $38 an eighth is cheaper than what you even get it for on the streets in most places I've been to. The cheapest I've ever seen an eighth for on the street is like $50, you know.
And it's often not a full eighth. You know, and in England, it's probably got thumbtacks and sand and broken glass in it. No, literally, they do that. But, you know, in America, it's probably 80% of an eighth, if that. But when you go to a medical marijuana place, it's absolutely an eighth.
Yeah, yeah. And again, when we interviewed the guys for the Guns and Weed movie at the dispensary, there was so much startup costs for government permits and stuff that is just completely arbitrary and ridiculous. Like, you must pay us $10,000 a year just to exist.
There was also a lot of just total horseshit coming out of some of the patients' mouths that ended up on the, you know, as pixels on the cutting room floor that we just couldn't use. Not from the people who owned the place. They were capitalists and they understood it. And they were really smart people, especially the one guy, I forget his name, Austin. But there was so much stuff from the people we interviewed that just didn't work, of people saying like, well, you know, I mean, the government should give us free marijuana because we're sick and blah, blah, blah. And all this uber status stuff that just blew me. And
worst,
like, I always vote
the worst
Democrat.
Go ahead.
I always vote Democrat because the Republicans want to take pot away. And I'm like, well, so do the Democrats. But what was the worst you heard?
And because it was the most common, was that why screw with us? Why not spend all of that time and money and resources going after the meth heads? Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, the owner said something like that, too, or not quite that. But, you know, I mean, I said to him while I was sitting talking to him, I was like, you know, I think all drugs should, you know, I said, do you think all drugs should be legal? I was kind of pre-interviewing him for the next segment. He's like, I know you do. And he laughed.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Well, it's like, if you view the government as a gang of thieves writ large, as Rothbard has instructed us to do, I sound like I'm in a religious meeting when I say that, but just do it, right? If you view the government as a gang of thieves, imagine if they came to your house and were going to kill you and you were like judging them for it in your head and you're like, man, this is just so fucked up. I can't believe they're going to kill me. You wouldn't think, I wish they would go kill somebody else. Why don't they go kill Sarah down the street? She's a bitch. Or something like that. I wouldn't think that. I'd be like, wow, why don't they just stop going around murdering and killing people?
Yeah, and the medical marijuana becoming legal in Colorado way before they legalized pot in Colorado to some extent, actually they took the taxes from it and used it to do more policing on not legal marijuana.
Right. Isn't that how they sort of sold it to the public? Is hey, it'll be okay because we'll take all the revenue and use it to advance the police state.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of how they worded the regulation in Washington State for the recreational marijuana to make it an easier pill to swallow is they gave all these concessions. It's taxed 25% at each stage of everything, you know, like production, distribution, selling, and all that money is supposed to go basically to law enforcement and all these other things that are state things that are really horrible. So in that point, it becomes a do I support the state by buying pot through their state pot initiative, or do I still buy it, you know, on the black market?
It's a no-win situation, and if I were a marijuana smoker, I'd probably do it through the legal means because I don't want to go to jail for something stupid that's not a crime. I hate to say it. I guess I'm not a good anarchist because I obey laws when I can.
Yeah. I guess the key, though, the good thing about pot is you could grow it yourself and I think still be within regulations.
And they used to bust you by looking at your electrical bill, and if it was like five times what it should be for a residence, they'd bust you. But now with LED grow lights, that's not really an issue, especially if you're not growing fields of it in your basement.
Right, right, right. Yeah, man. did you see on Facebook, even Tommy Chong gets that aspect of it. There was a quote from Tommy Chong I saw as a meme floating around on Facebook where he says, yeah, of course, pot should be legal, but as far as taxing it, taxes just go to this black hole called the government. What just all you have to do is decriminalize it. That's it. Just stop enforcing laws about it. And yeah. I was impressed that even Tommy Chong gets something like that.
Yeah, Squirrel Master.
So the Squirrel Master got it. So well, I guess we're preaching to the choir here, but yeah, man. Pot's good. Leftyism can be not as good as understanding that owning stuff is proper and, in fact, integral to any kind of free conceptualization of society. And if you doubt me and you're a lefty anarchist listening to this, the best book I would say to read on this, so you can sort of envision why property is not theft and why private property ownership actually accounts for all of the problems that the state or any kind of lefty organization or conceptualization.
Wait, what is the problem? I missed the first thing you said.
Oh, okay. So I was going to pitch a book that I read that sort of helps explain
I thought you said property is the problem. That's what
I
heard.
No, but some people think it is.
Ah, okay.
Some people think that property is the problem. There's a book that explains that private property ownership actually prevents the problems that lefties say it causes. It's called Boundaries of Order by Butler Schaefer, and I've pitched it before, and it's in my video, I Own Me. And it's basically an explanation of how a society that was based on property ownership could function, and the fact that that if we all own property, the inherent thing is we're all the owner of that property, so it's inviolate. We make the final decision on that. So any decision made on anything you own is uncontested because I own it. So it reduces this problem. You don't have the problem of the commons if everything is owned because anybody making a decision about something owns it. So who cares what he does with it?
Yep.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
You know, you said something previously in a previous cast about you were half joking about that they wouldn't allow the feds wouldn't allow Denver to or Colorado to continue with their legal pot thing because of the fiscal cliff, and they need to keep pot illegal as jobs for law enforcement officers. And I was thinking, you know, that is kind of that's kind of the theory. Like, we need cops to provide jobs for cops. Uh-huh. Really, having a force of people, you know, cops and especially drug cops in particular, like DEA kind of things. Basically, what you're saying is we should have a bunch of people whose job is to go around and beat up old ladies at random. That's just as ethical as busting drug users. And I really think people should use that analogy to argue with status and get up in their face when they say drugs should be legal. And it's kind of a straw man because it's kind of saying, well, if you believe this, you must also believe this, and then fighting that other thing. But it's really not a straw man. It's just a matter of degrees. You know, and old ladies do get beat up. I mean, there was a lady who, an old lady I read about who like woke up one day and there was somebody with a chainsaw sawing through her front door, and then they came in and roughed her up. I mean, that, and it was a, they were looking for her neighbor, you know, or her son that used to live there or something. They had a warrant and it wasn't her. It was no drugs in the house. That happens all the time. People get the wrong house gets kicked in, or, you know, the grandson staying with the grandma and they kick in and they mess with the grandma or beat up the grandma. I mean, there's video on YouTube of, during Hurricane Katrina, when they're going door to door collecting guns, of an old lady getting knocked to the ground and pepper sprayed by the police and National Guard because she didn't want to give up her little revolver that she had for self-defense. So cops, basically, if you think that there needs to be cops for things, you're advocating that we have a force of people whose job is to go around and randomly beat up old ladies. And that's not really a stretch. So use that term with people.
Well, yeah, but I think the problem is people like that don't get consistency of principles in the first place, and that's the problem, right? Is they don't understand the concept of how it's just a matter of degrees, because that's not part of their brain structure, apparently. They don't get how it's the same, because they don't get that yes, it's just a matter of aggression is aggression, and so who's doing it doesn't matter as long as aggression exists. That's the problem. So somebody stealing your money through taxes to build a road is the same principle as somebody stealing your taxes to murder somebody. It's still somebody stealing your taxes. They don't get that it's the same principle.
Or beating up old ladies at random.
They just don't get that consistency.
Yeah.
So that would be the problem I would try to address, and I don't know how to do it.
I'm putting this in the show notes. If you like cops, why not pay a bunch of people to go around randomly beating up old ladies? So we got a few other things left here. One is, we were talking about, I was adamant several episodes ago about why, you know, let's talk about something I'm adamant about. I was adamant about that people should not use, or that I wouldn't use, the Google-based Android computer that doesn't have a hard drive and stores all your stuff on the cloud. For two reasons. One is because that's giving your information to the government, basically, and other people, you know, Google, whoever they sell it to. And you're not going to always have access to it. And Google's cloud-based computing system went down for a day recently on several continents. So, you know, if you had that report due, or you really wanted to whack off and you needed your porn, or you really, whatever you wanted that's yours, that's on your computer, if you had that Google-based computing system, the cheap, like, oh, it's a really light laptop, it doesn't cost much money, and you don't have to deal with the problems of a hard drive, you know, you couldn't get your stuff for 24 hours.
Yeah, man, but I guess it exists because Google felt that somebody would buy it.
And because people are stupid.
If you're stupid enough to buy it, that's your own deal. And if you've got an argument for why you should buy it, spend your money. See if you like it. I don't know. Yep. I definitely see the problems you're talking about, but you know, it must be good for somebody. Otherwise, Google wouldn't sell it. And if it isn't and suffers from all these horrible problems, then eventually people will stop buying it. And that's why it's a beautiful thing, the market, isn't it? Because if something is that problematic, it'll either be fixed and people will continue to buy it, or it won't be sold anymore. And then the problem fixes itself. See, that's the invisible hand, leftist. It's as simple as that. It's not any magic or any faith. It's just that if people want to pay for something, they will. And if something sucks and nobody will want to pay for it, they won't, unless there's a thing called the state that forces people to pay for things.
There's something I'd love you to read that's in the chat room. It's my last two posts in there. It's a quote from Hermann Göring, one of Hitler's right-hand men who was just following orders. That's what he said when he was tried at Nuremberg. And I was trying to remember this quote or find this quote in the last episode, and somebody said, oh, this is the one you're talking about, and sent it to me. So go ahead and read that.
All right. This is the quote. Naturally, the common people don't want war. neither in Russia, nor in England, nor in America, nor in Germany. That is understood. But after all, it is the leaders of the country who determine policy, and it is always a simpler matter to drag the people along, whether it's a democracy or a fascist dictatorship or a parliament or a communist dictatorship.
Read the next one. It continues. I couldn't fit it all in.
Is this also from the same person?
Voice or no voice? Yes.
Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That is easy. All you have to do is tell them they are being attacked and denounce the pacifist for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same in any country.
Hermann Göring. Yeah. And that last part there about denouncing people who denounce war is still in effect in America in a really strong way. You know, if you say the military-industrial complex is horrible and we don't need all these troops over there. I mean, even if you don't say we need to get rid of the military and the government, if you just say, you know, we don't need the troops over there in those Middle East countries, which some troops actually say, like people who've actually been there. You know, a lot of people join the Army and they're all gung-ho about it, or the Marines. And we have more than our fair share of Fiend fans who are libertarians or anarchists who are either active military or vets. Once you've been in war, been in combat, you really look at the whole thing differently. And history is repeating itself, as someone said in the chat room. You know, I mean, if you go out and protest the war, the ongoing, never-ending war we're in now in any way, people will say you're not patriotic. They'll say that you're exposing the country to danger. It works the same in any country. Like the Nazis said, you know, 60 years ago, they had it right. And they had, I mean, really, the Nazis, I hate everything they ever did, but from a state point of view, they really had it down. I mean, they had oppression down, and that's why they're used as an example. Like, oh, George Bush is acting like Hitler, you know, or Obama's like Hitler. People say that all the time, and it's considered specious, but it's really not. It's a matter of degrees.
Yep, yep. That's a good point. Yeah, and Murray Rothbard in Anatomy of a State had a section about this where he says the state has advanced to the point where people conflate themselves or the country that the state is controlling with the state itself. So if the state is attacked, they think it's an attack on them.
Yeah.
When in reality, you have to view those two things as separate. We are not the state. We are not the government. They are a parasite on us. And if somebody's attacking them, good. It's like if somebody was trying to remove a tick from your neck. Let the tick be removed.
Yeah, and I did a blog post about that recently. I'm going to end with reading this, and then we can go to the outro. It's very short, and it's kind of hyperbole. I mean, I'm basically saying something scientific that has happened, and I know it hasn't happened scientifically, and it's kind of pseudoscience. But it's a blog post I did that says, humans have split into two subspecies, Homo sapiens parasitis and Homo sapiens libertatus. Homo sapiens has devolved into two distinct subspecies, Homo sapiens libertatus, how would you say that? Libertas? Yeah, libertas, and Homo sapiens parasitis. Homo sapiens parasitis wants to rule or be ruled, and for them, central planning is innately normal, even though it will eventually cause their extinction. Homo sapiens libertas are humans who want no czars, kings, presidents, representatives, mayors, NGOs, think tanks, or other violent vermin centrally planning their every move. And because of that, Homo sapiens libertas will be the victor without firing a shot. Evolution's natural selection will take care of it. Ben Stone says, true libertarians are not made, they are born. They just realize what they are the first time they hear someone explain the basic ideas. To which I'd add, whereas the parasitic subspecies will always defend the state, like they're defending their mother. And this actually came out of a comment I posted to a comment that Mark Schissler posted on our episode about that movie about the hippies and how they failed because of central planning. And he said, you know, something about central planning. And I posted this as a remark. And then actually he was like, wow, that's great. I never thought of it that way. And I extrapolated this. I actually spent about an hour working on this. And I really was busy and I was like feeling like, man, I need to spend some money today. I need to make some money today and I need to work on some money projects. And then I was like, oh, no, Mark donated $20 yesterday so I can sit here for an hour and work on this because the fiend's got $20. So Mark paid me in advance. Thank you, Mark. to do that work. So when you donate to the Fiends, you're helping us
to do Fiends work,
to sit around and write stuff, which is really funny because I saw something. It was some where do they say Obama's from? The idiots say Obama's not from America.
Kenya.
Yeah. There was some Kenyan site where somebody was listing their demands for the Kenyan government to, I couldn't believe how much statism there was on this site. It was all like, this needs to be banned. That needs to be banned. This needs to be enforced. And one of the things they wanted to enforce was that, employers would be forced to recognize on a job interview if you put Facebooking as one of your job experiences. So I guess I kind of am doing that because I'm saying like someone paid us some money and I just sat around writing a blog post for a day. But it was a good blog post there, and I think it did some good horizontal enforcement or horizontal liberation. And you know, we do this stuff whether we get paid or not, but when people give us money, we tend to want to do it more, it seems like.
Yes.
So yeah.
Of course.
Keep giving. And you know, we got like $100 in donations this week from about five people total, and that's more than we've ever gotten in a week, and it was immediately spent on buttons and money I was already owed, but by the Fiends that we've lost. But you know, I think that I need to rant more about how I feel like stopping this. I mean, we never get any money. I did that like a week ago, and all of a sudden we got these donations. So I kind of distilled that into something else, which was this Christmas thing, which is more fun.
There you go. That's more fun and productive.
Yeah. So you got any closing arguments before you want to play the outro?
No, I think your homo parasitic stuff sums it up, and yeah, it is kind of tongue-in-cheek and funny, but that's the main difference, right? That's what we need to be explaining to people, is the difference in our philosophy and others, is that we don't see any need for anybody to rule others. There's no legitimate reason for you to be forced to comply with somebody else's will at all, ever. You can do it voluntarily, like if you have a boss and a job, because at any time you can quit that job and you can choose not to follow your boss's orders and get fired from that job. But if you are forced to at point of a gun, that's the difference. And those who don't believe that that's a good thing are us, and those that think that that's the way the world should work are homo parasitis. And I think we win in the end, whether it's through genetics, like you say here, or through, I guess, just evolution. But I think we win in the end.
Yes, and that was a great place to end, but I'm going to mess it up by saying Mark points out that he gave $50, not $20. But actually, I think it was $50 Canadian. By the time we got it through PayPal, I think it was $40. So. Damnations. Damnations.
Damnation.
All right, man. Play the outro.
The Bad Quaker staff has discovered how easy it is to get everything you need for the holidays at Amazon. Everything from the coolest decorations to hangover remedies, and everything from the latest movies and music to poop stain remover. If you follow the Amazon link at badquaker.com, Amazon will give badquaker.com a tiny portion of the purchase. It won't cost you any extra, but you will be supporting this podcast. Thank you.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal, or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.
Thank you for listening to the Freedom Fiends Agenda. We'll be back streaming live every Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. East Coast U.S. time. on Freedom Fiends Radio at freedomfiends.com. MP3 archives of all Freedom Fiends episodes are available free at freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com. Worms.